Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
See some movement at the takeoff zone. It's Kelly Slater grabbing rail. A clean entry. This thing holding open. It spits.
When it spit me, I thought it was going to spit me off my board.
Comes out with the spit. Spits him out.
Comes out after the spit.
Gets spat out of another good looking wave here.
Spit. Spit. Spit.
We're just spitballing, right? Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, guy. It is spit. We're spitting here, spitballing. Spit, it's a surf show, it's a podcast. It features David Lee Scales and Scott Bass. Yeah, guy, it's... What day is it? Wednesday.
It is.
November 20th. November 20th.
Day late, a buck short.
Yeah. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Scott Bass. Thank you for ruining my morning with that image of one of the worst surf injuries. I don't know if that even qualifies as a surf injury, though.
Sure.
Does it?
Yeah, that's a surf injury.
If it involves a carabiner, I don't know.
So Kai Lenny posted a photo on Instagram. I hope you follow Kai Lenny. If you don't, you need to. And it's a picture, and he's in the hospital. He's in a gurney. He's laying in a hotel room. He's giving a shaka with one hand, and the other hand has a massive gash and gouge out of it. And the Instagram says, a day of consequences that led to an ER visit. The carabiner from the bow line hooked on my hand as my jet ski was dragged onto the rocks at Jaws and ripped a good chunk. Thanks to my whole team for the help and for ACL Cinema for the drive from the cliff to the hospital. From when the injury occurred to being in the ER, it only took 40 minutes.
Wow.
And it's a gross chunk out of his hand between his forefinger and his thumb.
Yeah.
It's quite gruesome.
That little webbing between... webbing that you would use to swim with. Okay, I'm gonna give it to him. That is a surf injury. Considering that he was at Jaws, if he was towing anywhere else, I would not give it to him.
He's in the hospital.
I don't care.
With his wetsuit on.
I don't even care. He could be free diving. By the way, did you see the footage of him the opening day at Jaws doing a chop hop up the face of the wave? Like he's turning up towards the lip and basically ollie 180s and kind of lands at the top of the wave and then surfs down it from there. It's like an alley-oop, basically, motion, but he does it mid-face, lands at the top of the wave, and then rides out down the wave.
Do you think Kelly Slater could do that?
Heck no.
Do you think John Florence could do that?
Yes.
Right now.
Yeah, well...
Today.
John, I don't know the state of his injury, but yes, in theory.
In theory? I don't want theory. I want to know, can he do it?
He has the ability to do it. I don't know if his knee...
He has the ability to do it? You mean you think he has the equipment, and he's trained, and he knows how to do that, and he's been doing it, and he's thought about it, and it's
everything,
part of his schematic and his brain?
Everything other than when you said he's done it, or he did it. Yes. It's part of his schematic. He has the talent to do it.
Well, you know where I'm going with this.
That Kai Lenny's the greatest surfer in the world.
Kai Lenny,
surfing's
right
not a
now,
sport.
Today, is Kai Lenny's the greatest surfer.
And it's a Travis Shamp mockery that I would say anything about it.
No, I'm glad that you're disagreeing. It makes for good pod.
I know. I'm just trying to think of all my Scottisms.
I think that Travis Shamp mockery hasn't been used in a while.
Not nearly enough.
You pulled that one out of the trash can. But I do think I think that you present a valid case that John is as well-rounded as Kai. And I think that my case that Kai is more well-rounded and a greater surfer at this very moment when you consider all of the wave riding, which is what a surfer does, he rides waves, all of the wave riding formats that Kai Lenny can take on. The wing, dude, the the freaking what's that called? The wing
the foil?
Wing sail. That thing's insane.
Wing sail?
The wing sail. Yeah, have you seen the wing sail?
I'm not sure.
So it's kind of like a kite. You know how a kite uses its form? It uses a bladder filled with air for its form.
Yeah.
Well, a wing sail does the same thing. So it's a maybe like an 8-foot long sail that you hold onto with both hands, and the boom is made out of this a bladder, right? Okay. So there's not a whole lot of hard parts, is my point. Okay. And you hold onto the boom, and it's a wing, kind of like when they jump off those cliffs in Norway, and
yeah, yeah.
And you catch the wind with it, and it propels you along as you foil. Hmm. So Kai Lenny uses this to foil, so he doesn't need a, you know, to get up to speed with a ski or whatever,
gotcha.
Or catch the wave. He just stands, lets the winds pull him up, and then away he goes. And he just uses it's insane.
And the
guy is going places that are
the board and the foil is the same that he's riding anywhere else.
Yeah, more or less it's foiling. You know, it's, the board doesn't really matter. It's right. Just it's a super small board because yeah. You don't need a lot of board because you're not paddling to catch the wave.
Right.
Like realistically, it's going to get to a place where it's just your feet attached to the foil.
Yeah.
On some level, I think, or just enough of a platform so that you can kind of have some tippy mobility.
Yeah, the platform almost it's a protector from the foil as much as it is anything else.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. So I interviewed Dave Dominey yesterday, who owned a sailboard company called Streamlined for 27 years, and he's the inventor of the Tracker truck. Super brilliant guy, engineer mind. And he was, and so he's heavily involved with the Lennies, and he knows Kai and his father. And he was talking about, and we were talking about, how can we get the foil so that it's safe, so that it's doesn't have, it's got like 7 sharp edges mm-hmm. that can cut your leg off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, that's sort of the future. Like if you can, if somebody can design something that allows for that thing to be a little safer,
yeah,
then more people are going to adopt it because it is getting to a place now. But by the way, as you know, there's already foils that run on a motor.
Yeah.
But we both agree, Dave and I both agree, that that's kind of lame. Like there's something inside my gut that just kind of goes, that's lame. I don't know why, but it's just not natural.
Yeah.
But regardless, we are getting to a place now with the wing, what did I call it? The wing sail.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wing sail, where you're not going to need power. The power is going to come from the wind, and you're going to be up and riding with a safe foil underneath you so that you're not so, you know, concerned about getting hurt. I mean, in the past with the sailboard, I mean, there's so many hard moving parts. And then with a paddleboard with a foil, you've got the paddle and you've got the longboard and you've got the foil. I mean, there's so many crazy parts to it that could hurt you. You know, if we can eliminate those parts. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine right now, like at the Malika Gulch on Maui, they're using this wing sail to foil downwind. They don't even need paddles anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They just pick up and that, and they're just ripping. They're just going so fast. I mean, that to me is just sounds like a ton of fun.
It's almost like it incorporates elements of snowboarding into that, like the, I don't know, the speed and like the fall line of going down on a snowboard. That's what that feels like more to me than it does surfing, even, you know.
Yeah, actually, it's a good point. Like, at what point is it more like sailing? Because, as you know, like the America's Cup boats, those boats go up on a foil and they have a sail, right? Yeah. And so if we have a wing sail,
exactly,
and we're just trying to get up on a foil, the only thing is that we're actually riding waves.
Right.
And
but those guys aren't.
Those guys are out in the open ocean. I mean, on some level, they must be picking up little ground swells and running with it.
Maybe.
But I think that they're getting their rise from the just the massive power and leverage that the boom and the sail and the mast create for them. But I don't
know. Do any of this stuff?
I talk as if I do.
You do, yeah.
But I do not.
No.
But I wear the gear that makes me look as if I do. Therefore, I am.
Okay.
No, just kidding. I was
going to say, why don't you?
I mean, because I've...
You golf and you surf and it's too
much. I've got so much going on in my life. It's just ridiculous. Like, I'm trying to pay for college and, like...
Yeah, what school are you going
to
go to?
I don't know. Where should I go? I was thinking like a junior college.
You could probably get into
inexpensive.
DeVry?
Yeah, online.
University of Phoenix or something.
Like Trump University, I was thinking. Trump University would be a good one.
Yeah, I heard that doesn't really pay dividends in the end.
I heard they have a really good collusion department.
I heard of you, yeah.
Where you can Collusion and bribery.
I heard if you want to, like, just give them money and not receive any credits that apply anywhere else at all,
right,
then that's where you would want to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess they have pretty good steaks. Like, okay, like leathery.
Steaks, vodka.
Ties.
They have some ties.
Like, the commencement ceremony is going to be insane. Like, it's going to be a party at the commencement.
You know? I mean, really, you do it for the alumni.
Well, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, we got to take care of them, you know.
Well, I mean.
Geez. I mean, there's only one.
Yeah, and he's in the White House. Right. At the top levels of.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah. So, go for it. I support this decision, Scott. If I can help you. Let's set up a Kickstarter.
I'm not sure if it's working. Have you been watching the impeachment thing?
I've been listening to it.
Listening to it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild.
You're afraid to get into politics on this show?
I don't think our listeners want to hear it. Yeah, I don't think it's prudent.
Yeah.
So we do owe a shout-out to Shaq, the Serving Heritage and Culture Center.
Why?
I have well, because this is our home studio where we're sitting. But I interviewed the founder, Dick Metz.
Again?
A series of interviews. Scott, he won't quit.
I know, he's great.
I can't get him to stop. And then I'm going out of town, and he's calling me like, hey, I'm going to be in town tomorrow. Can we do it again tomorrow? I'm like, dude, I've got 8 hours of tape.
Dick and Shaq, and I applaud them for it, but they want to get all his stories on. Like, they've been yearning for this. For a long time, I was on the, I think it was called the editorial committee here or something. Or maybe it was the audiovisual committee. I forget what committee, but we were really about getting all the stories of these guys that are sadly passing on, getting as much insight from them so that we can preserve it for future generations. And I know that they're excited about getting Dick's information on a digital platform so they can have it forever.
Well, I kind of joke about he goes on and on. The reality is it's all gold, and I cannot believe that I've got it. And so I think I'm going to release it throughout the month of December in 3 episodes.
Maybe you should do like a pay-per-view.
What do you mean? I just think.
It's too late for that. Opened up the gates of freedom, you can't go back.
I mean, that's just not the business model, you know? Like, I'm happy just to get it out there, and I think there's so many people who maybe have heard his name, probably a lot of people who don't know his name, and they're going to hear it, and it'll be the best episodes I maybe have ever done. Like, the stories are unbelievable.
The thing about Dick Metz, too, is that he's one of those guys that, kind of like Randy Rarick, like, he knows everybody, and everybody that's in the know knows Dick Metz.
Yeah.
Like, everyone knows Dick Metz, but nobody knows Dick Metz. You know what I mean? Like, and so now you're offering the opportunity for the average layperson to get to know Dick Metz, and he's a sweet, sweet guy. He's been a friend of mine for 15 years, and
I think what you mean
I'm pretty close with him.
By that, everybody knows him, but nobody knows him. What, even the people that know him best, he'll tell a story that they've never heard before. And it's a story that would be the highlight of your and my travel life, you know? And it's just a random one to him because he's had so many. For listeners who don't know, who want a little teaser, he basically went on a 3-year journey around the world, which was the inspiration behind The Endless Summer. So he came back home. He's friends with Bruce Brown, Hobie Alter. He comes back home to this area that we're in right now, Southern California. And
Dana Point. He's like one of the original Dana Point Mafia guys.
He was Laguna Beach is where he grew up. But comes home and tells Bruce Brown, like, hey, dude, I went to South Africa. There's this wave in Cape St. Francis. There's this Jeffreys Bay. Like, here's a bunch of photos. And then Bruce was like, oh, really? So Bruce then outlined The Endless Summer. So, and there's just so many little details along the way of, like, had this little thing not fallen into place, I would not have gone on that trip. And if Dick didn't go on that trip, we wouldn't have The Endless Summer. You know, and if we didn't have The Endless Summer, then we wouldn't have so much more of what we have. So it's so ripe with historical interest and context and travel interest. And I mean, he was also a pretty, living a pretty wild lifestyle. And he gets into all of that, just like sleeping with chicks and Tahiti, like all this stuff. So there's like a sensationalism that's great about it, plus all of this other richness. I'm psyched on it.
Yeah.
So, anyways, cool. Shaq, we owe you a thanks. We also owe a thanks to NeedEssentials.com.
Yes.
If you have not seen the new film with Laurie Towner, it's called Simple Things.
Super cool.
Yeah, what'd you love about it?
Yeah. I watched it. I sent Rob an email saying, cool, man, good stuff.
I love Laurie is now our working class hero. Like, I remember Laurie being on Billabong back in the
West Oz, Surfing Killer Rights at the end, and then laughs at the beginning.
Yeah.
That was, I love the, and the rights were, I mean, the lefts were insane too, but the rights at the end, they just absolutely scored.
Dreamy.
Yeah.
So
gnarly, kind of gnarly, but not.
A little bit gnarly.
Just probably gnarlier than it looked.
For sure. Like, it looks enticing. Like, you look, ah, I could do that. And then you see the water angles and you're like, oh no, that's actually pretty treacherous.
Well, it looks like it breaks right in front of rocks. Like, yeah. But it also looks like the water pushes you back out to sea. Like, it doesn't run you up under the rocks. But regardless, it's pretty killer. It's very killer. You got to check it out.
But Lori, came up kind of, I would say, mid-2000s, Billabong team before the recession, had all the hopes in the world, like big wave charger, charge all the slabs in Australia, and also doing huge full rotation airs.
Conrad Chopu, he's like the full hero that day along with Nathan Fletcher.
Code Red, remember him dislocating his shoulder at the Pipe Masters a couple of times in one day, two times in one day, maybe even the same heat. Then he got that cover shot last year at Cloudbreak. Like, the guy's on a tear, and he's been basically without a sponsor since the recession. He's a Lang Tile. He's a Tyler, supporting a family, and then just shows up and, travels twice a year, basically, to target important swells around the world and then gets cover shots.
I remember when I was working at Surfer back in the 2000s and being on the North Shore and shooting photos of him, and no one really, he got some great, he was one of those standouts where you just went, who's that? Everyone went, Lori Towner, you know?
Yeah.
I think he was riding for Billabong at the time.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys that everybody had a great photo of him, and you were kind of like, wow, kind of like the Hobgoods were like that. When they first showed up on the North Shore, it was like, oh shit, the Hobgoods, these guys really charge. There's always one guy or two guys or whatever where they just show up on everyone's radar because they put themselves in spots that were gnarly.
Right.
Know? And you're just, and Lori was like that. You're like, Lori Towner, how do you spell his name?
That's like Cam Richards is today.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
very neat, much so. It's like East Coasters.
Yeah, it is.
Because Brett Barley just showed up on everyone's radar in Hawaii.
Yeah. You know? Which is where everybody shows up on a radar.
Yeah, but you almost don't think Brett Barley needs to do that. I mean, he shows up in Africa and he shows up in the Outer Banks. And like, it's kind of like he could kind of not go to Hawaii and be good.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Can you, though?
Well, yeah, I think you can.
Nowadays, you can?
Well, yeah, I mean, for a little while, you know, when you think about it, there's a lot of guys. Name a guy that's on your radar that you're super psyched on that doesn't go to Hawaii.
Currently?
Yeah, or even in the past.
In the past?
Never was like a Hawaii guy.
The one guy, the best example of this in the past,
Dane Reynolds.
Aaron Cormican. Dane Reynolds went to Hawaii.
Only because he had to do the Triple Crown. It's not like he goes, yeah, every
year. But that's not the point. Whether or not they have coverage in Hawaii. I mean, Dane's Holly Eva turn will go down in history.
Yes, no doubt.
So, but Aaron Cormican is a guy that, like, everybody knew, and he never showed his face in Hawaii, you know? But it's definitely an anomaly. By the way, this rain is intense. For anybody wondering what that sound is, if you didn't...
Is it going to affect the quality of our fine broadcast?
It will, but we have no other option right now, and we're going to persevere.
By the way, do you know where the term broadcast comes from?
No.
Well...
Is this back a sexist joke?
No. Oh, okay. This is not a joke. I never really got any flack for that joke, by the way.
Good.
I wish Chaz would appreciate that joke, I thought.
Go ahead, text it to him.
I'm not going to.
Leave it on his voice.
Broadcast comes from back in the day when they were putting up radio towers to send signals so people could listen to radio around the country, say 1920. Broadcast is what farmers used to do with their seed. You would pull your hand into the seed bag and you would throw far and wide. It would be a broadcast. You would broadcast your seed far and wide. As long as your throw could go or your machine could throw the seed out, that was, you had a broadcaster, you know, a long throw of the seed. And that term translated over to those radio towers. When you put a big, tall radio tower up, your signal broadcast much farther than a short radio tower.
That makes a lot of sense to
me. Isn't that fascinating?
I know. What was it like to grow up in that era?
You know, I was 30 then, and it was, you know.
By the way, we haven't done our obligatory music conversation when we open the show.
Right.
So I want to clue you into something that you should absolutely be listening to.
Okay.
It's a podcast. It's called Dolly Parton's America.
Love Dolly Parton.
Do you really?
I do.
No way.
Yes.
Oh,
she's,
man.
She's so sincere and sweet and well-meaning and a wonderful voice. I don't think there's somebody, they said something on that country music show where she's never had a note come out of her voice that wasn't just perfectly pitched.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nor
no one's ever heard her not hit.
Nor a a cross thought, you know, or a negative word.
She's angelic.
She really is.
Yes.
She is a great American icon, totally. And I am thrilled that you are a fan.
Oh, yeah.
I've always kind of had a reverence for her, I think, just peripherally. But now that I'm listening to this podcast series, I am just a huge fan.
Well, so, you're brought in to her by this sort of like Maybelle, kind of like bushy blonde, big boobed woman. So you're drawn into her, or at least I am, by that, you know, by this sort of caricature.
Yeah.
And then you get to know who this person is, and you're like, oh my God, this is the sweetest, most beautiful saint.
Yeah, and super talented.
Totally talented.
So,
and smart, intelligent.
Brilliant. Yeah. So the producer of the show is the guy Jad Abumrad. He makes Radiolab, which is a great podcast. Honestly, the best sound design of any podcast ever. All of the shows that they produce are like the highest quality.
Do they do one in a truck in front of Shaq? Do they have rain? Like real live rain pattering?
They would fly out here just to get this like audio for an audio bed for a series that they're doing. You know, that's the level that they do.
Quality.
Well, it's not really, it's partially about Dolly Parton, but it's also about America and like it's kind of America through the filter of Dolly's influence, because she's been around for 60 years and she's persevered all of these political upheavals and changes in America, you know, America politics. She's like a feminist at once, but also a very subversive feminist, not a feminist in the way that like a lot of feminism is viewed. So the point is she's empowering, she's using that big boobed persona that you're talking about to actually wrench power into her control and own it, but through talent and hard work. And anybody, they show or they play footage of her from like the Dick Cavett show back in the day, or even before that, she's the first one to make a boob joke every time. Like the host will make some weird, creepy innuendo and she'll then like lean into it and make an epic boob joke that's way funnier than the host's joke is. She got her claim to fame on a variety show. I forget the country singer's name. Apparently, he was huge. I didn't even really know his name.
Yeah.
But he was completely misogynistic, sexist, sure. Back in the black and white. Yeah. And he was having her on just as like a sideshow to do a duet. She's 20. He's 55. Of course, you come to find out they were sleeping together.
Jimmy Rogers?
No.
Later than that. Buck Owens?
No.
Would I know the guy?
Yeah, you would absolutely.
George Jones.
No. It's with an S. Wow. Gosh, it's going to kill me that I can't think of it. But at any rate.
I'm just glad it's you that forgot.
He completely like, you know, tried to step on her career as her star started to rise.
He got jealous.
He completely got jealous, tried to push her aside. She, of course, can't be contained. So they end up splitting up. She goes and has this crazy career, never says a bad word about him. And all the press is asking her, hey, it seems like he sleeps with all the young girls who've been on his show. And she never admits to it, never says a bad word. Then later in life, when he's bankrupt and he has 5 divorces, he's paying alimony all over the place. He needs money for health. You know, he's like in the hospital and can't pay his bills. And she buys a bunch of a catalog of his music to basically get him through the final stages of his life financially, but never uses the music, does it just as a charity thing. Mm-hmm. And even still never says a bad word about him, you know? And she's just like such a positive person. So the show isn't really about her specifically. It's not like, it is telling her story, but it's more telling the story of America through the eyes of kind of Dolly's influence and navigating all these things that have happened in America. So Dolly Parton's America. You should be listening. It's a limited run series.
How do I find this? It's just a podcast?
On iTunes or whatever. Yeah, just search Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton's America?
Yeah.
And how many shows are there?
I think I'm on episode 6. Like they're releasing them weekly, but there'll probably be 8 or 10 total.
Oh, cool.
But like yesterday's episode was on Jolene, the song.
Jolene, Jolene.
Sing it. So don't sing it. Okay. So there's a whole genre of music that's about cheating, right? And then there's a subgenre that's about the other woman.
Right.
And every song in that genre about the other woman is basically vilifying the other woman and talking about how you're going to kick her butt, you know?
Yeah.
Jolene is a unique song in that it's fawning over Jolene. She's like, your beauty is beyond compare. I know that you could take my man, but please, I'm vulnerable and have pity on me. And that's a perfect reflection of Dolly. She's not vilifying the other woman. She's never going to point the finger.
She's like Mother Teresa.
Yeah. She's just going to go, hey, I know you're better than I am. I know you're more beautiful than I am, but please.
She leans into everything with grace. That might be a good way to summarize it.
I think so. Yeah. But then behind that has tremendous talent and hard work ethic, yes, and has been touring the entire time and releasing albums for 60 years. So it's like, I could be, you know, I could be mean and pull rank on you if I wanted to.
But that's not my nature.
But it's not my nature.
I'm a loving and tolerant human being.
Yeah.
Dolly Parton.
So there you go, Scott.
I'm stoked on her, man. I hope a little bit of her rubs off on me. I would be...
Was that a boob joke?
No, it wasn't. It kind of came out that way. But I just meant her value system. Thank you very much. And her beliefs.
Both of her value systems.
Oh, my God. That was pretty good, dude.
Thank you.
David just said both of her value systems.
Thank you.
You're weird. You're kind of creepy.
Thank you.
That's a little bit creepy. Oh, my God. I noticed that your chop hop just perked up a little bit just then. That's kind of weird.
That's now very creepy.
Yeah. Hawaii has been pumping.
Man, it's so good.
For a long time, actually. Even, I mean, I've got some friends over there, and they're like, they can't remember when they have. It's been months. Like, from the south swells kind of rolling straight into winter, there was never a break. And it continues to be good.
But officially, Pipeline is open for business.
It's been open. As you know, you probably saw on Surfline some notes I have here, too, that you know, the O'Neill wave of the winter started on November 1st, but I mean, that thing, they have waves from October at Pipe. All the sand's good for Pipe. But it got me thinking, is there ever a wave of the winter that's not at Pipe? Like, it's almost should just be called the Pipeline wave of the winter or something. Because has there ever been like a Jaws wave or like a freaky wave at like Log Cabins or something? Or, you know, like.
Off the Wall.
Yeah, same difference.
Same, yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I would imagine like Sunset has contention.
I don't think it. I mean, you would think
it does. I've never seen it, but it should, yeah.
But I mean, and it makes sense. Everything's kind of like right in that little bubble of the Pipeline area, but.
It becomes apples and oranges, to be honest, if you're trying to compare Jaws to Pipe.
Yeah, you can't.
So it's nice that it is just at Pipe.
But should it just be called Pipe? Or is that just like.
Well, the Wave of the Winter's more got a ring to it.
Yeah, it's way better. Like, it's, what do you call that? Onomatopoeia? No.
Maybe.
Alliteration.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Wave of the Winter. Makes more sense.
So what's in contention right now? Have you seen?
Yeah, well, Brett Barley's got a wave just from the last 2 days. I know Cam Richards has a wave from October. Mm-hmm. Brett Barley has a wave from a couple of days ago. A couple of days ago, like 15 rides probably. Kelly Slater, Jamie O'Brien, Coa Smith, Mikey Bruno. Mm. You know, there's quite a few already. You know, because it's just been 2 days of just nonstop gorgeousness.
It's exciting.
And it looks like it's going to be a good run here through to the Pipe event, we hope.
Have you ever surfed Pipe when it was kind of doing it?
Not proper, no.
Yeah. Did you ever have the opportunity?
Well, yeah. Could I have paddled out?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't want to.
Weren't interested?
No, dude.
Because I'm the 35, crowd?
I was like 35 years old and 35, 20-year-old Pipe specialist. Like, I'm... You got to start young and work your way up the ranks there. You're not going to come in as a 35-year-old and get anything.
Yeah.
You know,
you're going to get smashed.
You'll be lucky if you get smashed. You know, you probably won't even get the opportunity to get smashed. It'll just be shut down.
I mean, if you're actually trying to sit on the peak and, like, actually get a wave, you will end up getting smashed. There's so many people that you're dodging.
Yeah, you don't know which one to get. You're going to get frustrated. You're going to go on one that kind of rolls underneath and sets up too gnarly on the inside reef. And, you know, you got to know what's going on out there. You just, it kills people.
Yep.
That wave kills people.
It does.
Sadly.
Yep.
Let's see. The Hawaiian Pro. Haliva, have you been watching it?
I have.
I have too. Off and on. I've been watching it. And I got to say that the how do I say that?
Difference?
No, the differentiation. I'm having problems. You're not going to help me. You're just going to let me look at you. You're just like, he's laughing right now, folks. He's like, he knows how to say it, but he wants me to just kind of grind through this.
Differentiation?
Yes. Thank you. The differentiation.
Yeah.
The difference between the
exactly.
good...
Which was the better word to choose anyway?
I was trying to sound smart, for God's sake. The difference between the guys that are worthy and the guys that are not worthy... I guess all Hawaiian waves tend to do this, but
yeah.
recently for this event at Haleiwa, that wave really separates the good guys from the bad guys.
Yeah.
And some of the guys I've seen that are just ripping it include that I've watched specifically the last round, and they're only halfway through round three, but round two as well. I watched some of that, but Ethan Ewing blew my mind. Ian Govea absolutely blew my mind. Jordy Smith, all of the top guys, but a couple guys like Ethan Ewing, you know,
Tanner Gadowskis,
yeah. great call. And these are guys that are flowing and fluid in the face of a chunky, difficult wave that runs fast. And of course, it's been onshore a little bit in the afternoons, too. So there's been some chunk in the system. And the guys that have it figured out that are smooth, it's just mind-blowing. And mostly because the guys that don't have it figured out look so horrible mm-hmm. relative to the guys that do have it figured out that it's night and day.
Yeah, tentative. The guys that don't have it figured out, there's like a tentativeness. And Haleiwa will just have its way with you.
There's a lot of like 4, 5, 6 check turns at the bottom before they commit to
exactly.
the turn. Whereas
yeah.
the good guys, maybe there's two of those and then they're banging it. And then there's, you know.
Well, Jordy, your examples of Jordy and Ethan Ewing, I would say, are perfect in that they're bottom turning and they're going to go into the lip no matter what. And they've got like that bottom turn is so perfect and sets them up so well that even if the lip is throwing, they still have enough projection to like really go through it.
Yeah.
And they just know that, like, that's the trick with that wave is don't back down or don't show any hesitation because it will slap you
yeah,
down.
Yeah.
But if you've got Jordy's power and Ethan's kind of fundamentals, you can just like boom, bang it, you know?
And, yeah.
And the lip will let you kind of push through it.
Yeah,
you just have to commit.
You made a great point, which is you can't hesitate. You've got to commit to your turn. And you see guys hesitate, and they just get smashed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. By the way, Ethan Ewing did a year on tour, got bumped off, lost, early round every. Did not fulfill any of the potential that he had, but he is one of my favorite surfers, and I will be sad if he does not re-qualify and he just kind of disappears into oblivion like all my other picks always do, because he really is. People reference Andy Irons, and his style is very Andy-esque, but there's nobody else like it, really, other than Andy. Like, there's nobody else that we have in this modern era that brings to surfing what he brings to surfing. Hmm. And so it would be great to see more of him.
So you're saying Ethan Ewing is the next Andy Irons?
No, I don't think he's going to win 3 world titles or anything, but he has that same approach to surfing.
What about Seabass? Because a lot of people...
Seabass, yes, has elements of it in his approach, but he doesn't have...
Ethan Ewing's more like Andy Irons than Seabass.
I think so. I think Ethan's going to go... I don't know. Seabass just... He's too... apathetic about competition, you know, like he's too fun loving.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have the Andy kind of batten down the hatches.
Exactly. Which Seabass would, he succeeded on his talent alone, which says a lot about his talent, but he doesn't have anything beyond that. There's no desire to win a world title. He'd be thrilled if he makes a heat, you know what I mean? Like, he's not even trying to win a contest. He's just like in a heat going, I hope
going
I make
surfing,
this.
Surfing, I just happen to have this jersey on.
Yeah, and notoriously catches 100 waves on the inside. Yeah.
Jack Freestone looked really good, too. I don't know if you caught any of his heat. Did you happen to see Ian Govea? Because I would suggest you guys go to round 3 heat analyzer and watch Ian Govea's heat.
Wow.
He looked pretty amazing. Wow. I know, that says a lot that I'm saying that.
It really does.
Because, you know,
that you
I don't
even
like goofy
know
foods.
One goofy foot Brazilian from another.
Maybe
I'm going to go look at Heat 3. It's actually going to be Jadson Andre.
Maybe it was Jadson. I don't know. Could have been Italo. Ian Ferrara. Anyway, there's some good surfing going on, and there's some really bad surfing going on. And I'm not going to even bring up the names of the bad guys, but they know who they are.
Do they really?
I hope so.
What's weird is that even the great, great surfers lose heats out there. I mean, there's so on that QS... at this level of the QS, there's so many great surfers, and you're right, like the best, the cream clearly rises. You could pick top 5 guys, but there's so many good surfers that still lose heats.
I feel like a QS in say France or something, like you know, like a 10,000 in France, if there is one, or a 6,000 in France, QS 6,000 point. A lot of guys could make it to the semifinals and the finals. A lot of guys. I feel like at Haliva, by the time you get to round three, it has a way of separating the men from the boys, to use that cliche.
True. You got more Hawaii talk?
What do you got? I'm bringing it all. What'd you bring?
Well, I didn't want to interrupt your Hawaii segment if you had more Hawaii stuff.
I don't have much more Hawaii stuff other than...
All right. I got one for you. Okay. Not Hawaii. Ditching the cam at Surfline. Oh, have you seen this
at
debate?
At Rincon, you mean?
I'm sorry. Yeah. Ditching the Surfline can at Rincon.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
So
totally
fill
botched
me
that
in.
Title.
Fill me
all right.
In.
Christian Beamish wrote a piece, I guess, like a petition, and who you interviewed for the Boardroom
Podcast.
Good friend
of mine, Christian. Good guy.
And I'm going to read from Ryan Lovelace's Instagram because he's a local in that area. And he said, "Friends and family, our local surfing community has embarked on an uphill battle to remove the newly mounted surveillance camera at Rincon. We hope that we can organize and democratically have this device removed, as there is no local demand for it, and the installation was not with the agreement of the local surfing community, who these cameras portend to serve. Who knows? Maybe we can start a snowball and encourage other communities to stand up for their sacred spaces as well. Please click through, blah, blah, blah. Sign it. We know this is an uphill battle, but the lineup won't sit idly by, and we would love your help and support. This effort and discussion has been spearheaded by an amazing bunch of surfers. Thank you to Aaron Blatt for organizing this petition, or Aaron Fiendblatt, for supporting this petition." So what are your thoughts? They want a new camera was installed at Rincon, which I would presume their argument, Ryan's statement, is that this is only going to add to the already crowded lineup and let people cherry pick their sessions and just show up when it turns on and all that sort of thing. So Ryan and that local community is interested in removing the camera. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are there is no doubt that cameras don't lessen the crowd.
No question.
They don't take away from the crowd. Do they add to the crowd? Quite possibly.
Yes.
I could see that argument has water. That people go there when they see it good, or they use the camera for whatever reason. And full disclosure, I use cameras all the time.
Yep.
And even more full disclosure, I do a lot of work with Surfline on a marketing level. So, and I'm friends with the guys at Surfline. They're good friends of mine. But if these guys succeeded in removing the Surfline cam at Rincon, I would be okay with that.
Yeah.
And frankly, if we could do that with our fingers and every single surf cam disappeared and they never showed up again, I'd be good with that too.
Really?
Yeah. I would. There's something about having to go out and search it out and find it and do it and be on it that speaks to sort of the adventure of surfing.
Yes. I mean, I do agree with that.
Now, again, I use the cams, and I use them to my benefit. So I do want to raise my hand and say, yes, I'm a hypocrite. But I'm just saying...
So why are some spaces
sacred? In a perfect world, like, if it could happen, and I'm not saying this should happen. I'm just saying if for whatever reason cams got eliminated, which they're not... But if cams could get eliminated, in other words, if you get rid of one, you got to get rid of them all.
No, that's not true.
I'm just saying in a hypothetical.
Yeah.
In a hypothetical, if you got rid of them all, I think it would be good for surfing on a core level, not maybe for the industry or for marketing or for data collection or for, anyway, go ahead. That's my thought.
I'm okay with that hypothetical, but... I don't know. I could probably argue against it,
to be
honest.
Here's the argument. Do you like it crowded or not? It's a yes or no
question. That's not the argument.
No, it is the argument. You agreed with me that cams for sure make it so that it's not less crowded.
Correct.
Okay. So do you like it crowded or do you not like it crowded?
I would prefer it not crowded.
Okay.
But that's not the end of the question. No, I didn't say that.
I'm saying
I would like
so
it
you'd
uncrowded.
Rather have convenient yes, crowds exactly. than yes. unconvenient less crowds.
I would rather be at work and be able to look at the cam and decide whether or not I'm going to surf this afternoon or where I'm going to surf this afternoon. And if that means it's going to be twice as crowded as me just driving
so
and winging
you
it,
have,
I'm okay with that.
Do you
exchange.
Have to look at the cams to make that determination?
I don't have to, but it helps me.
So you're okay with
the convenience and the
crowds.
Help is worth it. The convenience and the help is worth the crowds
crowd.
To me.
Okay.
Because the crowds aren't so bad that it prevents me from surfing or from even getting waves.
Right.
And then it also allows me to pick where it is going to be less crowded. I can look and see the crowds on the cam. And then I go and surf somewhere else.
I mean, just for the sake of argument, it would be less crowded if there weren't cams. So if you're looking for less crowded spots, which is, sounds like what you're doing. When you use the cams, you're actually looking for less crowded spots.
No. That's the tertiary reason why I'm using the cam. The first reason is, where are the waves best? What is the tide and wind doing? That sort of thing. And then, like, on the low down the list, even beyond third, is
so
whether or not
the
it's crowded.
Data of where the waves are best, what the tide's doing, what the wind's doing, all of that data, it could be argued that you and I know how to get that information without a cam.
True.
Right? And so, do you think that you could do that? Do you think that you could know where to go surf without a cam?
Yeah, I used to call Surf Report.
Well, without
the
Surf
telephone
Report,
number.
Without that.
I still do, actually. Believe it or
anyway,
not.
Anyway, we're going to go down a rabbit hole here. But.
So, but the question to
should we that bring, I have, bring it back to Rincon?
Yeah, the question I have about Rincon is, the reality is, I think we're at a point where we're making, it's not all or nothing. We're at a point where we're making decisions on which spots are sacred and which ones are not. And the reality
we're
is,
we're not, they are. Right? Surfline is.
And Lovelace and his community is making that, his community is doing this thing that in all reality could have ripple effects. Other people in other communities could go, hey, they were successful, so now we're going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, is there a spot that you would never put a camera in? Like, is there a spot right now that doesn't have a camera on it that you would never put a camera in? And also, why is Rincon that spot for these people when you can see Rincon from the highway?
Yeah.
Like, Rincon isn't exactly a secret spot.
No, it's not.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But a cam probably does make it more crowded, which is why they're doing it.
It doesn't make it less crowded.
Right. It doesn't make it less crowded. Exactly. Let's just start there. So are you asking me, are there
like,
spots?
Yeah. What spot would you never put a camera in? What spot would you never put a camera at? Take two.
I would never. I'm kind of disappointed that there's a camera at Black's.
Yep.
Again, I'm in a weird place because I use the cams for my forecasting business. Like I'm appreciative yeah. of the cams, and so I want listeners to know that
for the
sake yeah. of this discussion, I'm going to take this side of the equation of the argument, but I don't necessarily stand behind it with my actions, and so I'm being hypocritical.
You've made that clear.
Okay. But
I mean, through a lot of your actions in life, you've made the hypocrite thing clear. I'm just kidding.
So for the purpose of this discussion, I'll be the one that's anti-cam, and you'll be the one that's pro-cam. Is that fair to say? Like, we'll just have like a mock debate?
I mean, I
because
think
I'm not anti-cam is what I'm trying to get across.
Right. Yeah. And I am kind of pro-cam, so I'm okay with that.
So with that being said, I would say all of the spots need to have, if I'm going to be the anti-cam guy for simply for the purpose of this conversation, there's no spot that's not sacred.
Yeah.
They should all be removed.
Yeah. Pipeline is like a great argument. That is sacred ground, and it require, but I guess
it's such a trippy cultural difference too. Like in Hawaii, people don't care as much
because pipeline's going to regulate itself.
That and
there's nobody watching the cam at pipe who's like,
true Hawaiians don't have the same sort of anxiety about catching waves that I think Californians have. Like, we're just like, oh my god, what's the wind doing? Like, I've met true Hawaiian guys, like West Side guys, that are just like, dude, it's going to be there. It's there every day. It's been there for thousands of years. It's going to be there for thousands
okay,
more years.
I'm glad you're saying this.
And there's not anxiety, though. True Hawaiians. Now, there might be Hallies that moved over there that are like, you know, on it like they were when they were in California. But my sense is Polynesians and islanders, the ocean and the waves and the water is just part of their life, and it's never leaving, and they don't have an anxiety of chasing the perfect wave down the way that we do.
You just nailed, you for illuminated for me the way that I was feeling about this without even knowing. And that is, I don't feel any proprietary right to even my local surf spots. So the camera, to me, it's not like, oh, this is my resource, and the cam is, you know, defiling my resource. I just view it as like, no, this is public land. Like, I don't have a say in this. I'm just as much of transient as anybody else who either buys here or doesn't buy here or comes in to
right,
enjoy it.
Right.
And so
it's a public resource. And who are Ryan Lovelace and Christian Beamish to say, hey, this thing needs, because frankly, both those guys are transplants and they'll both tell you that.
Yeah. I don't feel that way about them necessarily. And I do, I think Ryan made a comment in the comment section in a reply to somebody, which was, no, no, no. What we're arguing against is somebody coming in here, a private entity coming in and profiting off of this public resource.
So it's a like, private property rights. This is now he's getting into legal property rights.
I think
rights.
That's what his thing is, like Surfline's coming in here just to sell ad space based on the viewing of this camera that is going to, you know, make our spot more crowded. Like, no, well, the local community's not benefiting from it. Surfline is benefiting from it. That's what his point was.
Okay, so he's saying that the local community needs to benefit from it or you can't do it. So he's now,
I think,
like,
he's saying the local community doesn't want to benefit from this private, you know, endeavor.
Then they won't
either.
Well, see, now that's where we're getting, now we have a problem, because now you're telling me how I can or cannot make money.
Yeah. But you're using, I mean, our likeness, you're using our, you know,
what do you mean likeness?
Well, they're going to be in the water. There's going
to
be...
They don't have to be in the water. No one's forcing them to go in the water.
Yeah.
Don't go in the water if you don't want your likeness used.
Yeah.
So now it's a private property thing.
Well,
is it okay for a homeowner to get the $500 a month or whatever he's getting from Surfline to put this camera up?
That's the question.
Yeah. And so from a private property respect, legally, does the community have the right to take away those property rights?
We're gonna find out.
Well, I would say no. I'm a firm believer in property rights. I don't think the government has the right, or anybody has the right, to tell me what I can or cannot do with my property.
So if you're on your property, and yeah, I guess you're right, if you're filming everything that happens outside, that does feel, you're right, you're,
it's
legally
a public,
you're
beach.
Legally, yeah, I know, that's true.
It's not like I'm filming your backyard while you're on a trampoline.
We just took opposite stances now. Now I'm fighting against the cameras.
I've done my job. I win.
Wow. Wow. Master debater right there.
No. So there's you know what? There's so much to unpack really in this. We could do a whole show if we would have prepared for it. Because I do think that they bring up some good points. I do think that I read a lot of Ryan's Instagram comments. He seemed to come across pretty level-headed. The problem with Ryan and Christian too, for that matter, is, did they get nominated as the spokespeople for the surf community? Are they really the spokespeople for the community? Maybe they are.
Yeah.
Well, not nominated, but you know what I mean? Did the surf community get together and have a meeting and go, okay, you guys, you're the smart ones that are good writers. We want you to craft something and get this thing started. Like, how did it start? I'm sure everyone feels the same way. Like, nobody's going to say, yeah, the cam's good, but they use the cam. I'm sure a lot of people use the cam.
And nobody's going to question whether or not Beamish is the right guy that you would want to have write the piece and represent the surf community.
Well, all I'm saying is, as long as the surf community at large got together and elected somebody to be their spokesperson, that's fine.
They didn't.
Yeah, this just came out
of left
field.
But there is no surf community at large, dude.
Here's my point. The reason that you want the right person writing this is because you don't want somebody like me going, that guy's just a transplant anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you want, like, Matt Moore to go, yeah, we elected Christian Beamish to be the guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You want, like, a CARP guy to be, he's our guy, and he represents, and we give him the right to speak for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And until you have that, then you're going to get poked at by guys that are like, yeah, but Ryan Lovelace is from, like, I don't know, I think he's from Seattle.
Yeah.
Or something. So, and there's nothing wrong with that, but unless he's been given this point, this place of speaking for everybody, this place of authority.
Look, he's not even saying this is the place of authority. He's just saying, hey, this is this little group of people.
Who? How little?
He and whoever his friends are,
right.
This little group of us feels this way. Sign or don't sign.
Yeah.
And he
did a good job.
And if it becomes a community movement,
great.
And he becomes the spokesperson, then that happened organically. And then, yes, that was a democrat.
Right.
Democrat.
Yeah. Say it
democratically
again. Differentiate.
democratically
selected. You need to differentiate from democracy or democratically selected.
I will try to enunciate better.
Yes. Well, and I think Ryan did a good job of keep going. He kept going back to that point. Yeah. A lot of people were calling him out. He's like, hey, man, no one asked you. Don't read it. Leave. Move on.
Know.
You know, like.
I know. By the way, it's so funny how angry the internet gets.
Oh, God. They broke the internet with that one, man.
It's so good.
I spent a good hour reading through all that shit. Holy mackerel. But it's a fascinating thing, I think, on sort of a privacy, on a surf community level, on a private property rights level. It's a pretty cool thing. I mean, I think it's a topic that needs to be addressed. And so, therefore, it needs to be addressed, you know, with a certain amount of grace and tact. It can't be like an internet spit fest.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
Well,
I think they did an okay job of doing that.
I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the way that Ryan couched it and presented it was totally level-headed.
Yeah.
And
he kept coming totally back fair. To level-headedness, which was smart. What do you think? You're all
I'm
about
fine,
the can.
I'm fine.
Are you
going to
use the Rincon can?
Yeah.
You'll use it and it'll determine whether you go up there or not?
No.
Yes, it will. Why else would you use it?
I mean, I'm
so
curious.
So when I
see
you on the water up
like.
There, I can be, you're one of the cam guys.
Dude, I got to drive 2 hours to get there. The cam's not going to dictate the drive. Like, I'm either going to commit to the drive a day before, you know, or not. It's not like I'm going to look at the cam in the morning and be like,
the way all missions to Rincon are anyway. Yeah. You're like, it's good, I'm going. Yeah. I know it's going to be good. The tide's low at 2 or what, you know, like, you're usually, guys that do that, you know, and there's a lot of us.
It's
from down here to go up there.
And it's a point break. And so
especially
it's not subject. Like, it's more predictable when it's going to be good or not.
It really is.
And so you don't need the cam. Like, for
but
me,
the cam
surfing
would
the local
make
beach
you go,
rate,
God, it was good today. I know it's the conditions are the same tomorrow. I'm going.
Okay, the worst thing that can come of this is people going home, watching the cam rewind, and then posting the clip of themselves on Instagram.
Well,
that's
biggest the whole
grievance.
Other thing.
That's my biggest grievance with the cams.
I've never looked at the cam. By the way, I heard the cam's down, by the way.
Oh, really?
Is the cam up? Can you pull it up right now?
No, I don't have the internet.
Where was I going? I had a good question.
Rewind.
Oh, yeah.
Surfline Rewind.
Yeah. Is the cam good enough so that you can buy the watch that Surfline has now and get your own clips? Because I can imagine it's probably pretty close if it's on one of those houses.
Is that cam specifically good enough?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that cam.
Like, is it at the river mouth?
I'm not sure.
Is it where, like, and so will it create a congregation of people that are just going to surf in front of that cam so they can get their clips sent to them via email?
That's my point. This is the most egregious use of the cam, if that happens.
So you're okay with the cam unless that happens?
Yep. That is my...
That's where you draw the line.
That's my...
And how do you determine whether this happens or not?
Because I'm on Instagram scrolling and there's some pixelated footage of somebody trying
pulled to hold away granny not so great
footage. Doing a weak top turn that they're proud of,
and so then you call them out, you become the call out culture. You're just like,
I just unfollow. I don't have any need to call out. I don't have any need to get into a debate online.
You're just
unfollow.
What if it's Connor Coffin?
Yeah, he deserves an unfollow
so
sure.
No matter what, you're gonna unfollow him
unless it's Tom Curran. But Tom Curran would never post the video. He would post a screenshot of the video, and it's so pixelated that you can't even tell if he's frontside or backside. You know, that's a current move.
Okay, so you're pro cam unless the cam gets used for vanity purposes.
Pro cam unless vanity purposes. Yes for Connor, no for Kern.
Oh my god, it's all so confusing, my friend. You've got quite a Instagram going on.
My
there.
Life is complicated, Scott. I am a very complex human being.
It's going to be fascinating to see where that thing goes. Like I said, on a grander scale, it sort of brings up the whole ranch stuff, and it brings up surfers are the worst. It brings up who are you to say who can or can't surf there, and then Ryan would say, well, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
And there, all of these little arguments were sort of thrown out there on his Instagram. Is his Instagram still up? People should go check it out.
I saw
there's some good fodder on there.
At Ryan Lovelace. I saw when I read it, I was trying to feel invested in the debate, and I really I know it's a good talking point for the podcast, but like I was like, I don't really care. I don't own that wave. I don't own the house. I don't own the cam. I don't really.
I kind of have the same feeling.
I'm just gonna go surfing.
I had a surfers are the worst feeling. I was just like, you know what, I've got this, not this again. That's
kind
of what I got.
Yeah.
I was like, oh god, here we go.
I don't
go
feel
again.
Connected intimately to either side of this argument, And is it going to affect how I surf and when I surf? I don't know. Probably not. I'm going to surf if I have an afternoon free.
Kind of feels like the genie's out of the bottle. And to try to grab the genie and put it back in the bottle right now is way too late.
Yeah.
You know, like when I was 20 years old and you could call 976 surf or whatever.
Yeah.
That's when I was having this argument, you know, from an ignorant standpoint of a 20-year-old. It was like, I can't believe they're reporting on.
Totally. It'd be like
8th Street, you and, Del Mar.
It'd be like you and I trying to get in on the gold rush right now. Oh, dude, you're only 150 years too late.
What's gold rush? I want in on this.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, speaking of unlimited waves, the wave park. There's been some wave park news.
I know.
Right? No. Melbourne. Yeah, you're like, meh.
Yeah.
I interviewed the guy that's putting in the Oceanside Wave Park. It'll be on the Boardroom Podcast soon.
Okay.
Cool interview. As you know, I'm a big fan of wave pools and wave parks, and I was fascinated by it. And there was a recent video I added out of Melbourne for Urban Surf, which is going to go online and open to the public, I think, in January. So just in a month or two. And it showed this slabby wave that the Wave Garden Cove technology made. And so that kind of had everyone kind of up and stoked and stuff. And then in Palm Desert, the city council just approved that. Somebody sent me a clip of the city council meeting, which was really quite boring. And that's called DSRT, and I think the Hobgoods are a little bit behind that. CJ maybe, or Damien.
They both are both as ambassadors or something, and yeah. Josh Kerr too.
Yeah. And then this one in Oceanside, like I said, I had an interview with Mike Grell, who's the developing partner in the, for Zephyr Properties, and that'll be online on the Boardroom Show. But so this sort of wave pool, I don't know if Stab framed it like a war thing, but it's not war. It's more like an arms race. I think they used the term arms race. Whatever you call it, 2.0 is happening. There are two parks in Palm Desert, one in Oceanside. And frankly, the Del Mar Fairgrounds is looking at what to do with their property. Horse racing is taking a massive dive. Nobody's going to it. They have this incredible land. And I chimed in. They asked me to give them some insight. And I'm like, man, if you could turn that thing into like something that has to do with wellness and health, and you know what the community of Solana Beach and Del Mar and North San Diego County is, which is, you know, yoga and climbing and mountain biking and surfing and outdoor activities and wellness and farmers markets, like something that was authentic to the region, instead of, you know, the fairgrounds now seems like, you know what, I use the term, the fairgrounds seems a little bit like illness instead of wellness. Like when you think,
ouch.
Well, only because when you think of the fairgrounds, right, what do you think of? Deep fried fat, sugary drinks, $13 Bud Rottweisers, hot dogs, cotton candy,
yeah,
and carnies. That's what you think of. That's what the fairgrounds.
I think of the Boardroom Show. I don't know about you.
Wow. But anyway, I'm just telling you that.
No, I agree.
They're in a great opportunity to turn this thing around.
It's the word fairgrounds. You think of carnies and cotton candy and all right. of those things.
And those
it's
things exist.
It's not unique
there.
To Velmar. Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm hoping that, and I know that the good people there at the 22nd Ag District are going to try to turn it around. Otherwise, they wouldn't be reaching out to.
Well, you're right.
Decision makers and stakeholders.
Focus it on the community. Focus it on wellness. The question is whether or not wave pools are a trend.
Yeah, and maybe that's too much of a roll of the dice for them, fine. But I could see an Olympic skate park venue there. I mean, skateboarding's not going away. It's in the Olympics.
Yeah.
If you put a wave pool in, guess what? You might be in the Olympics, too. You've got
a wave pool, so the business model isn't flushed out yet, dude.
Well, you don't know that. You haven't done enough.
I do know that. That is the question for everybody still.
Well, then why are they wrong? Why are they doing it? I would suggest
because they want to be early in on the trend.
You don't want to be early. You want to be third to market. You want to see where
you want to be third to market.
Yeah, you want to see the mistakes are being made. You want to see where all the mistakes are being made. You want to know that if I build a wave pool technology, that in 20 years it's going to be the killer. It's still going to be the killer shit. It's not going to get outdated when version 5.0 comes along in 10 years. So there's all these things that you want to see. Somebody make the first mistake so you can go, oh, don't do that. And then you go in and do your thing and you do it better than all of them.
Of course. But the most important thing that you want to be, that you don't want to get wrong, is the revenue model.
Right.
That has not been proven.
Right, which is why you don't want to be first to market. You want to see where they're making mistakes so that you can go, okay, this is where we're going to do it right. So that the nobody's spending $30 million on a wave pool that doesn't already have penciled out that it's going to work.
Well, they've penciled it out, but it hasn't been proven in the marketplace.
You know what? I talked to a guy who surfed Waco the other day. It was 39 degrees. It was 47 in the water. And the place was booked all day long in Waco, Texas.
BSR is the best example we have so far.
And it's a good one. And frankly, Kelly Slater's thing could get booked out every day. There's enough wealth in this state. You don't think it could get booked out every day?
I don't. I think there's enough wealth.
But that's a lame one to look at anyway, because there's just not enough waves in the day.
Yeah. Brisson.
But I know guys are surfing Lamar. Like, it's like you'd be surprised. There's guys that are booking it out. I just talked to a guy. I more than once I hear people go, yeah, I just got back. Me and five friends paid $4,000 each or whatever. And
I know. Brissick surfed it yesterday.
Yeah, like a lot of people are surfing it.
Oh, no, not. He surfed Waco yesterday.
Oh. Was it cold as shit?
Yeah.
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 And it's booked. Solid.
Waco seems to be.
Yeah, and it's in Waco.
I know.
Could you imagine if it was in Del Mar?
Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Or in Oceanside, where it's going to be?
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it'll be killer.
The thing is, it's got to be, again, affordable. And Waco is affordable.
Yeah.
You know. By the way, side note. Or I don't know if you have more on your wave pool talk. I don't want to jump the gun here.
You're jumping the gun. That's all I got.
Did you watch... I'm going to guess no.
Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know that you watch a lot of surf videos on the internet.
It just depends. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
Okay. I'm under the impression that you don't. But did you watch Surfer Magazine's Handmade Part 2?
No.
This was really good, and I feel like because Surfer Magazine, they just pushed your box aside.
Dick. No, I'm just kidding. I love Glenn.
Because Surfer Magazine... doesn't have the, I don't know, audience that they once did, or just as much kind of excitement that they once did. They put stuff like this out that is very, very good, and I feel like it just flies under the radar and it doesn't get seen. They did this is now part of a series called Handmade, where they get four surfers together to go on a surf trip and build all their own surfboards for the trip. So on this trip, they had Andrew Doheny, Ellis Erickson, Alex Nost, and Shima Buttonshaw. And all those guys build very different styles of boards, and it's 30 minutes long. It's a documentary piece, and you and I, when we do our respective podcasts, interview a lot of surfboard shapers and talk about design. This does a more effective job than we do, simply because the visuals are so helpful. And
speak for yourself.
And I don't say that lightly, because I think we generally do a better job than other people do when discussing surfboard design. But these guys kind of incorporate that much attention to detail, and the surfer shapers that they're interviewing are, you know, certainly talented, certainly have a lot of boards under their belt, and they're all articulate communicators. And in the direction of the piece, they really focus it on design conversation. So it's highly worth watching. I think Ellis Erickson is really kind of focused on the edge design and exploring that and improving it. I surfed with him when I was in Australia and rode one of his edge boards. It's the first one I've ridden. And I didn't quite figure it out. You know, I surfed one session on it, so that's not enough time to really suss it out. I think what I really enjoy about watching him ride them is that you actually see the limitations of the design. Like, he's a very good surfer, and you see him putting it through its paces and hitting a limitation and then coming back in and explaining it. The rail caught right here when I was doing this turn, so I'm going to go back in the shaping bay, make this adjustment to improve upon that. So in a very granular way, you see improvements being made on a design. And it's not just like, hey, I want to push this as far as I can. It's actually, I'm feeling sensations on this edge design that I get out of no other board. That's why I'm pushing this design forward, is to get all of the benefit of this design and then
improve it so that there aren't limitations on it, and then we can apply this edge to either, you know, high performance thrusters or longboards or anything in between.
So I was at Gary Linden's a couple days ago in Oceanside, and we were digging through some old boards, and we came across this Wilderness, which is a Bob Duncan label. Bob Duncan was the guy who worked with Greeno. This board says George Greeno Designs, and it has Bob Duncan's initials on it, and it was for this guy, and it's one of those edge boards. It's a tri-fin edge board from 1989.
Wow.
And it's beat up and stuff. And Gary and me and my friend Mark were like, I was going to put it in the auction, but it's just so beat that it's not eye candy, but it's from a design standpoint, it's fascinating, right? Because Ellis Erickson needs to realize that Bob Duncan and Greeno have been working on this thing for 40 years or something.
Oh,
you know?
He realizes it.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
Ellis spends time with Greeno all the time, and he and Kidman made that On the Edge of a Dream film. And
so, you know, my point is that we decided to take this Wilderness board and ride it and figure it out, and Gary wants to make one. He's all fired up on the edge board, and I've been getting this phone call from this guy up in Santa Barbara, too, that's just... He just calls me out of the blue, and he's like, you're the guy I'm supposed to talk to. And he's, like, pumping up this whole edge thing, and it's just kind of crazy. But point is, what I'm getting at is I'm going to be riding this Wilderness board with Gary, and we're going to try to figure out and make one and see what we think.
Have you ridden an edge
board? No, never have.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
We got to get into a couple of wrap-up things.
Yeah, I got to get going.
Have you been watching Stabs the Pickup?
No.
Okay. Do you have a Duke Kukunamusi moment?
I know what it is. Is it the thing on the North Shore where they sit around and do their deal?
Stabs,
like,
basically
Ashton
doing,
and somebody else talks to Tanner, and they talk to...
Yeah. Stabs doing a TV show weekly, or maybe twice a week from the North Shore, just kind of keeping you current with everything that's happening.
Do you like it?
No. I mean, I love...
Why don't you like
it? I'll tell you. I love having updates about the North Shore. I'm curious to see who got which wave when. Who, like, all of this kind of stuff that they're providing is valuable
problem?
Information to me.
What is the problem with the show?
The structure, the format, and the host, to be honest. Like, they got this girl, Tiff Kazaley, I think is her name.
Yes.
And she's almost void of personality. You know, like, she's...
Too cool for school?
I don't know. She's not even being too cool. She's just...
Boring.
She's just not a... charismatic, you know, camera presence.
She's
and I would argue
our
that
our friend Rosie.
Right. Yeah,
Rosie
exactly.
Rosie would be good.
Rosie would be great. Rosie's kind of the best example. So I think, like, there's a little bit of miscasting there.
Right.
I think Ashton, I love Ashton on the No Contest series, but as just sitting in front of a camera, I feel like he's kind of deferring to Tiff a lot of the times. Almost like they want Tiff to be the lead in this piece, but she's certainly not picking up the ball and running with it. So then Ashton is kind of just like playing like really low energy, just kind of delivering the lines. And it's just not great. It's just not great. You know, it's like, I want some of the information you guys are giving me, except I could get all of this in 2 minutes and be happier. It doesn't need to be 20 minutes or 12 minutes or whatever the length is.
It feels like... And I haven't seen it, but my gut feeling is that the warm blanket of vibe that is the North Shore has descended on that production, and it's just no energy there because they're afraid they're going to step on somebody's toes and they're trying to be too cool. And
maybe that's what
it is. They've got to tiptoe around, and who's going to walk through the door and punch them? And there's just this... The North Shore is sort of... The cancer of the North Shore is kind of filtered into that show, I think.
Yeah.
And I've never seen it. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
It's not... The cameras aren't making it less crowded. You're not wrong about those things. I'm just not going to say you're entirely right. I mean, look, I love that they're making an effort. Like,
they're
making a go at, like, these, you know...
People have been trying to do
weekly updates,
forever,
weekly,
you know,
shows.
They've been trying
it's
to
just,
do
it's
from
not
the house.
Great.
You know, there was all these things about... Let's, you know, at Surfer, we used to do this thing where we went to all the houses and we did an update on the internet and...
Yeah.
You know, like, let's try to capture how cool all the houses are. And, I mean, you know, it's in one format or another, it's like, let's, like, the rumor on the bike path, what's going on. And, you know, that whole thing has been tried. And it's kind of cool, I think. But it's also, you kind of get the feeling that it can never be done right.
I think
it
can.
Because to do it right, you might get beat up.
I think
everyone's afraid about
right.
getting beat up.
I guess. I think it could be done correctly. Or entertainingly, let's just say.
Entertainingly.
Yeah.
Is that a word?
It is. Look it up. Duke Cook must-see moment?
Best in show this year at the boardroom. Mm-hmm. I've got a new sponsor.
Okay.
FYI CBD. Oh, and they're nice. Stepping up to the plate, so we're going to have a much more robust best in show. I want to invite every board builder in the world, all the hobbyists, guys like me and you who have maybe built two or three boards, guys like Andrew Doheny, and the world's best board builders to bring in boards for best in show. There's going to be more prize money this year, and I want to have a really robust floor filled with a bunch of cool boards. So everyone will be allowed to enter for free, no cost, and we want to get best in show. We just want really there to be so much killer eye candy.
Yeah.
And we're going to have the judging be different. We're going to have it be more of sort of like, I don't want to use the word spectacle, but there'll be more of an engaging element to the best in show this year.
Is FYI CBD giving away product, or will they have product?
They're going to have cash for the winners, but yeah, of course there'll be product there for
sweet.
Sure. Yeah, that's sweet. It's non psychoactive health supplement.
Yep, sweet.
Yeah.
Duke Cook must see moment.
2020 Icons of Foam. Pat Rawson has chosen some of the shapers for his Shape Off competition at this year's boardroom in May at the Del Mar Fairgrounds.
Pat Rawson's the icon.
He's the honoree. Yeah.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
Wow, you buried the lead in this story, dude.
I thought I told everyone.
Wow.
So as of now, Pat Rawson has chosen Chris Christensen, Timmy Patterson, Bill Barnfield, defending champion Ryan Birch, and the Japan boardroom winner, whose name right now skips me, but he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And he's going to pick a few more, and so there'll be eight competitors honoring Pat Rawson in the Icons of Foam Shape Off this year at the boardroom.
May 2nd and 3rd?
May 2nd and 3rd.
I'll be there.
Del Mar.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Dukes and Kooks, must-see moment.
Did you know we sold a Jerry Lopez lightning bolt this weekend for $20,000 at the
no.
Lightning Strikes California Gold Surf Auction?
Crazy.
Yeah, 20 grand.
Was it a new board or an
old
one? It
was a vintage Lopez. Whoa. That was 100% glass off restoration.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So we sold 27 boards this weekend.
Who bought it?
Can't tell you. Super top secret.
I'm jealous.
Kooks and Dukes?
My Duke? This is a shocker, Scott. Smivy and Von Deadly. The boys from Ain't That Swell podcast.
Yes.
Are getting Tulsi Gabbard on their podcast.
Good for them.
Can you believe that?
That's so cool.
They got Tulsi
we
Gabbard
doing
on their
politics.
Podcast. I'm not giving my opinion. That's a huge get. That is the biggest get in all of surf podcast history.
Wait a minute.
A Democratic.
You need to do your history. You need.
Who's a bigger get?
How about Greg Knoll?
No.
What?
He wasn't ever running for Democratic nominee for the presidential campaign. She could be our president in 2020.
Yang gang, baby. Andrew yeah. Yang.
Okay, get him on the boardroom then. And then I'll be impressed.
Maybe I will.
Dude, those guys got Tulsi on their podcast.
That's
and,
cool.
And by the way, they yeah. had a great conversation.
She seems like a smart young lady.
I honestly, I click play and I'm like, it's going to be so soft. They're probably not going to like.
And they got right into it.
They got right into it, and she knows surfing.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, she's from Hawaii.
Yeah,
well, no wonder.
She's from Hawaii. She's
Andrew Yang's not from Hawaii. It's going to be hard to get him on the board.
It's going to be hard.
I'm getting Tulsi.
Good. Go get Tulsi. And it was a phone interview, so like,
yeah.
But it was still awesome. They did 30 minutes with her, and
those guys are from Jersey, aren't they? Where are those guys from?
What?
Ain't that swell? Oh no, they're from Hawaii or no Australia.
They're from Australia.
Yeah, the Australian guys. Okay, yeah.
They're from Australia.
Sorry. I love those
right,
guys.
Well, anyways, the Duke is Smivy and Von Deadly of Ain't That Swell podcast. We're getting Tulsi Gabbard and actually having a really good conversation.
That is cool. I'm stoked. I want to listen to it.
So my kook, I'll send it to you, Scott.
Yes.
So my kook is, okay, this story comes from Jake Howard on Stab. Quote, the United States Securities and Exchange Commission has filed charges against a Roberto J. Clark Jr. for hustling investors out of $350,000 who thought that they were getting into the booming, highly lucrative jet board business, aka motorized surfboards. Clark showed investors a forged contract for surfboard orders from a major cruise line, made misrepresentations about purported orders from water sports vendors, and marketed the investment in his company using baseless revenue projections. But that's not all.
He went to strip clubs.
Old Roberto was living high on the hog.
He's a buyer.
Buying fancy suits, spiffy cars, front row tickets to sporting events, and of course strip clubs. Scott, guess which state in the United States this took place in?
Florida man scams investors with jet board.
Could it be any other state other than Florida?
No.
It could not be.
No, and he's making it rain at the strip
club. Making it rain. So I did not identify the kook in this story yet, but there is a kook. Who is the kook, Scott?
I'm guessing it's Roberto.
Plot twist. Not Roberto.
Who was it?
Investors who would invest in motorized surfboards. They are the kooks.
That's true.
You think that's a good business model? Invest in a wave pool.
Oh, my God.
You'd be better off.
You know what?
Better off.
I did get taken on that deal, I got to admit.
I got some animosity against old Roberto. Rubber toe.
I have to piss like a racehorse.
Me too. Must-see moment. Luke Hine.
Yes.
Is the goofy footer out of Australia riding DHD's fishes. Fish. He's doing a series called Imagination Roulette. The episode 3 is glorious surfing. Twin fin surfing. You'll watch this video edit, Scott. You won't, but if you did watch it.
I will watch
it. If you did watch it, you will strictly ride a fish for the next month. It's that amazing. So Luke Hine's Imagination Roulette.
I'm a big fan.
Roulette or roulette? What do you
go with? Yes, roulette.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Well, Scott.
Until next time, adios and aloha. We need to be about moon. I want to crew with you. We need the lamppost sun. I got to be the one with you. With you. All bloomed for you.